There's a new book out by a fellow named Jonathan Merritt, who is the son of a Southern Baptist preacher and is the religion correspondent for The Atlantic. The book's title is called Learning to Speak God from Scratch, and it's a reflection on the recovery of religious language, he hopes, for our culture. Words like grace and wisdom and creed have completely almost fallen out of disuse, just in regular speech, kind of outside of churches. And he begins, though, by reflecting on the moment when he learned about the power of words. He was 14 years old. He was a new student in his high school. And in a situation that will feel familiar to many of us, the senior bully came to pick on the new kid. While he was in the hall, there came Billy, calling him an F-word. Which I won't use here. It was not, Jonathan explains, an attack on his sexuality so much on his gawkishness and his newness, but that word had power, Jonathan discovered, for everyone in the high school, for a time at least, seemed to treat him as though he had cooties and wouldn't get anywhere near. Until after a few weeks, one day, another senior, a girl this time, decided to take young Jonathan under her wing, giving him a place to sit at lunchtime and introducing him to a number of other kind people. "Why are you doing this for me?" he asked. "Because you are my friend," she responded. Two F words, and friend. One a blessing, one a curse. And in our second lesson from James today, James focuses on the amazing power that we human beings have to deliver both blessings and curses. The whole book of James is about zeroing in on our rather interesting penchant as people for hypocrisy. And in this particular case, in this particular chapter, it's all about the words that we use. The tongue, James starts out by saying, is like a fire, like the rudder of a ship. And it can be full of deadly poison. It's rather exaggerated imagery that James uses. But when he gets to the point, his point is this. We human beings have the power to stand up and bless God. But at the very same time, we also have the power, and we can and do curse those, James says, who are made in God's image. Which is any human being. For Genesis tells us that human beings, male and female, were made in the image and the likeness of God. And for James, this is a complete contradiction in terms. We cannot be people who have been called into Christ's service and use our mouths in these contradictory ways. Now, to be clear, when James uses the words blessings and curses, he doesn't use them in the way we often think about those particular words. As the chapter continues, what James makes clear is cursing is not just words that get bleeped out, you know, on national broadcasts. Cursing is any kind of language that is rooted in a, well, selfish ambition is one term he uses, or envy. Or we might use words like frustration or anger. Anytime we use language to try to get one up on someone, to win, to prove how right we are and how wrong someone else is, well, that's language in the mode of curse. Blessing, meanwhile, the very word blessing, literally means in translation, if you took it apart from its Latin and from its Greek, literally means to speak a good word. And James makes clear that that's rooted in a disposition that's oriented toward mercy, kindness, gentleness, willingness to yield. The awareness, in other words, to say, hey, you know what? I might be wrong. Language that comes from that particular place is language that blesses someone else. Language that comes from wanting to win curses someone else. Now, what does that mean? As Linda just got up and said, and we could not have planned this better, we didn't actually plan it. As Linda got up and was sharing for us, you know, our Genesis team has been working on the idea of nonviolent communication, or, you know, actually finding ways in this highly polarized society in which we live to find ways to speak to each other that, in a way, bear witness to the kind of language and speech that fit our identity as Jesus people. And it's really hard to do. That's why, in some ways, we've been working on studying it. If we all knew how to be kind and gentle and yielding and merciful to each other, we wouldn't have half the problems, it seems, that we have. But indeed, I believe that what James is asking us to do is to focus deeply, especially in this polarized time, on our very first identity, which is as Christians, as people who have been called to Christ's service. And what might that look like? Well, if you come to the book study, or if you came to the retreat back in May, you'll learn there are lots of different ways this can be applied, from around your kitchen table to Facebook. But since it's, you know, political ad season, here's how I imagine it might look like. If you're a Democrat, and some of us are, blessing might mean thinking about what you post on Facebook about President Trump. And whether you're posting to score a point, or vent, or release frustration, or whether there's an argument about a policy that you're trying to build up. If you're a Republican, and some of us are, same goes for the people on the other side, Nancy Pelosi or Kamala Harris or call it Kaepernick or take your pick. No cheap shots. No demeaning language. And you know what? I don't know about you, but I find this really hard right now. Because all around us, again, as Linda and our Genesis team are trying to point us to, all around us, we have language that I think falls in the form of cursing. Because there's so much frustration, and there's so much fear, and there's so much anger all around us that we can be tempted, as people of God, to forget that, well, God has called us first to be baptized children, and that our language is meant to conform to that identity. It's why I think we all have to, or we all get to, I guess I should rather say, come to church every single week and have God come and say hello to us. As I was trying to tell the children, they were all kind of looking at me like, no, don't get it. But so hopefully, here's try number two. God really gathers us in God's name with words like grace and love and communion, because we have to first be reminded who we are, that we are not Republicans and Democrats, that we are not, pardon me saying so, Steelers fans or Browns fans, but we are baptized children of God. And that is a very hard identity to live out sometimes. Jesus makes it really clear that he expects it's going to be so. What does he say about discipleship and following him? It means taking up your cross and walking after him. Not an easy thing to pray for someone that you do not like, to know and trust that God is active, even through people who can disagree with us so vehemently. But in calling us to his table, in calling us around the cross, God first gives us the words that really matter. Those words, grace, love, communion, gentleness, kindness, mercy, forgiveness. We speak a lot of them in the very first few minutes of worship. And somehow in that speaking, I imagine God speaking to us, because that's the thing that Christ comes to say to us, that we are beloved children, that mercy is the way of the world, that kindness is indeed possible. Christ so believes in this path that he was willing to die. And he is raised up so that those very words can live in us, so that they can take flesh in our lives and in our speech. Around the cross, we receive the words that we really need. We receive forgiveness, and we receive mercy. And from the cross, we are sent out, under the cross, I want to say, under the cross, we see our neighbors, maybe so different than we are, in the light of that same mercy. And in receiving them and us as children of God, God empowers us to speak the words of kindness and generosity that he's always speaking. Amen.